Dana Lash's Absurd Truth Podcast, sponsored by Kel-Tec.
It's his life mission to make bad decisions. It's time for Florida Man.
Can you wrestle a python, or is it just about not getting killed by it? You know what I mean? Okay, so a man in the Everglades wrangled a 17-foot-long python under the moonlight on a dirty road in the Everglades over the weekend. Matthew Kogo, 49, he's a python hunter, you know, because they're invasive and they're trying to get them all. There's legit video of him doing this. Y'all, this thing could kill him. It could wrap around him and kill him. Good night. Welcome back to the program. Dana Lash with you here at the bottom of the second hour. And don't forget, you can listen coast to coast all over the country. And you can check out the simulcast as well. Channel 347, DirecTV. Find us on X, Rumble, all of those good things. So this is obviously a story that we've followed for quite some time. And stories like this, because you have the politics of it. But because of the nature of this story, there was something that resonated within me about this story because I was raised by a single mom. And so, you know, this kind of story hits me a little bit more personal than I think some of the other stories that I talked about, because I know, you know, the struggle that kids feel when they grow up. And, you know, you have daddy-daughter dances and you have all of these huge issues in your life. You get married, you have these huge issues in your life, and you don't have a very significant person there with you to take part in that. And it's even worse when it's a decision that that person makes, not because of death or anything else like that. So, and I think I've talked to you guys about this before, and I've always just felt very enraged on behalf of my next guest because of this. London Roberts, I think, is an incredibly brave person, because I can't imagine stepping out into the storm of this political, you know, catastrophe, whatever you want to talk, however you want to call it. And she's just doing it to fight for her daughter. And I think it's safe to say that she's motivated entirely by fighting for her daughter. We've seen all kinds of stories and seen all kinds of women, you know, try to get things and, you know, all these Gloria Allred and all this stuff. Her story, her pathway has been very different. She has a new book out called Out of the Shadows, My Life Inside the Wild World of Hunter Biden. She's the ex-girlfriend of Hunter Biden, and she's the mother of beautiful little Navy Joan, who I think everybody first saw on the cover of this book. And she is a gorgeous little girl. And London joins us now via Skype. London, thanks so much for coming on with us and to just really kind of really humanize this story, kind of pull it out of the political world and really sort of humanize it. And you, I know you're doing it for your daughter. And I know that one day she'll see all this and think that my mom was so incredibly brave for doing this. So congrats on the book. I know it comes out August 20th. And just thanks so much for joining us. I appreciate it. Now, the first question, this is a big step to come out with a story like this. Why did you feel this was the time to do it?
Well, I mean, for a lot of reasons, but, you know, the main reason for me is throughout this book, you know, it starts off with my relationship with Hunter and all these wild, crazy things that happen, all these wild, crazy stories. And then it goes into the paternity suit. And this is kind of what I tell people, you know, the healing journey is a process.
Yeah.
And it's not something I would have been able to talk about a year ago or, you know, 2 years ago, because, you know, if you think about it, I didn't file the paternity suit until my child was, what, 10 months old, because that was a healing process that I had to go through. I wasn't ready. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I'm at a point now where it's taken a lot of healing and a lot of time that, you know, I want my daughter to know that I stood 10 toes down and was able to tell my story despite whatever narrative was held against me and who was held against me. It doesn't matter. I want my daughter to know that, you know, her story matters, and I want her to always be able to tell it. And so I don't know what better gift I could give my daughter this year than, you know, my book for her birthday. It comes out the week before.
Oh, wow. That's beautiful. And the timing for that is a great birthday gift. And it's called Out of the Shadows, My Life Inside the Wild World of Hunter Biden. Cause you get into all of that. And, this, I know that, you know, cause you guys have settled, you had a court battle, and we were all kind of watching that. Like, who would want to deny or not be accountable for their, you know, their daughter, especially the sweet little girl. Do you feel at this point, are you in a good spot with that relationship? Do you feel like he's done enough to kind of acknowledge and affirm her place with him?
You know, a public statement was given, and, you know, he does Zoom calls with her, but, you know, there's always that little Zoom call where she'll throw in, okay, and maybe we'll come by and see you sometime. You know, it's difficult because she's your daughter and, you know, you want what's best for her, right? And you want exactly what she wants in life. And she yearns for that.
Right. Yeah.
So, I mean, I think he's taken steps forward, but it's tough to say that he's done all he can.
And
I know he's in a tough place, you know,
yeah.
He's going through so much right now and so much is on his plate, but you know, they always say family first and they always put their family first and they can take weekends to Camp David and go on all these places. And there's one little Biden that doesn't get invited on this trip.
One little Biden that doesn't get to go on the trip. And that's the other, she's never met her grandfather, has she?
No.
And I know you haven't met the president. She's never met her grandfather. Has she met any of her half siblings or?
No, she's not. She actually found out she had half siblings when back in the day when the news would be on. And I've gotten very protective about putting her in places where the news is on, because these days you don't know what's fixing to show on the screen. Is it something from the laptop? Is it, you know, something with her family that just seemed like a slap in her face? And one of the last times that, you know, we were around the news, it showed, I don't know what they were talking about, but they had the family picture there from their inauguration. And Hunter was holding his son, and Navy's like, that's my dad. You know, who is he holding? And I have to tell her, you know, that's our little brother. And, you know, and then she's, well, who's that? And who's that? She's asking down the line. I said, well, those are, you know, those would be your big sisters. That's, you know, Hunter's other children. She said, do they live with my daddy and I live with you? And, you know, I don't know. I don't know where they live. So it's like, I can't tell you that. Well, how come they get the theme and I don't? They must live closer to him than I do. And I'm like, that's probably what it is.
Yeah. And, that's, you know? And the questions will probably grow the older that she gets, because she's so young now. She's like 5 years old now. The questions are only going to grow.
Right. And, you know, I talk about that towards the end of the book. There's a lot of hard conversations that I have to have with her. She's so intelligent for her age and so brilliant. And, you know, she wants to know who her dad is. And she's like, you know, one of the stories in the book, she asks, she comes up to me and she says, can I hear my daddy's voice? And, you know, what do you do? So the only thing I could think of was to Google the eulogy that Hunter gave at Beau's funeral. Where, you know, he says when he woke up from a car accident and he says, you know, he can hear Beau saying, I love you, I love you, I love you. And my daughter's looking at this phone screen watching it and she just whispers back to him, I love you, and kisses the screen. And of course, you know, it's heartbreaking because he doesn't even know how much she loves him.
Right.
And it's sad.
This, we're talking with London Roberts, who's the mother of beautiful little Navy Joan. And she's one of the littlest Bidens. And I think everybody knows London's story. And she's been so brave in talking about this. I know that there was discussion about the name, like whether your daughter was going to have his name. And he had said that he wanted to protect her. It was like for security purposes. And that's why he didn't want her to have his last name. But everybody knows that that's his daughter, which seems sort of like a defeating argument for him to make. I mean, what is the resolution on that? Is she ever going to have the Biden name?
The last time and I had talked about it through the child support dispute, which was also the first time I had talked to him since I'd been pregnant. And this was last year. We sat down and he said that, you know, he felt like it was for security purposes and her living in Arkansas, it probably wasn't best. And, you know, at that point, I didn't care. He wants to, you know, develop a relationship with her through Zoom and through art. And at the end of the day, you know, I felt like my daughter won because, you know, that was Father's Day that she was getting a dad, like whether it's over Zoom calls or whatever, this person that she has yearned for so much and wanted to meet, she's finally seeing, even if it is on a phone screen. And we'd actually decided that, you know, one day when she's old enough, she chooses her last name.
That's good for her. I'm glad that she's getting that she's at least getting like somebody there, like something that, you know, he's taking that spot. You mentioned when you were pregnant. And I read, and I know that this was something that was discussed, I think, during your court battle. the time that you were pregnant, because I know that you worked at Rosemont Seneca, and there was a story that I don't think a lot of people know about, that it just seemed to sort of just flutter out of the press. And it was the story about how, I mean, you were on the company insurance, and then you got kicked, you're pregnant, and you get kicked off the company insurance. And there are all of these text messages where, you know, Hunter apparently, you know, was kind of behind removing you from being insured while you were pregnant. And I was reading this, and I was really angry on your, I was absolutely livid on your behalf, because, you know, I've got kids and I know how terrifying all of that is. And you're dealing with, you know, health insurance and your doctor's checkups, and you don't want the added stress of that on top of it. Can you talk about that? And how did you even find out about it?
Well, I found out because his assistant had texted me and told me that this would be my last week on the payroll and stuff. And Hunter wanted to relay that message, you know, because he couldn't talk to me. He couldn't address me because he knew that what he was doing was wrong. He knew that, you know, he had a child on the way, and it was, he knew all that. And so he had someone else tell me, and the rage, the heartbreak, it was just like, I knew that he was never going to take accountability and he was never going to step up. And it took time to process all of those emotions, because it was, I was in a dark place myself, because I had come home and, you know, I'm pregnant with a man who's literally abandoned me. He's not talking to me anymore. I know he's suffering from addiction and he's in a dark place, so I'm making excuses for him. It's possible that I'm carrying, you know, one of the next first grandchildren. And think of the scandal, you know, that this is going to cause. And then you come home to this small town, and I didn't go out. I was in a really dark place, so I didn't really go anywhere. I tried to stay home. And there were so many rumors around the small town about, you know, me being pregnant, not knowing who the father was, and being ashamed. And like, no, I was doing that to protect him. I thought by me coming home to Arkansas and not telling anyone who the child's father was protected him. And I took all that backlash. And, you know, then you have a child and you become a mother, and you're like, there's no way when this child gets older and she asks me who her dad is, I'm going to tell her, I don't know. Or I'm going to tell her, don't worry about it. No, you know, from the beginning, I'm going to be honest and I'm going to fight for him to take accountability and own up to his child, because a child doesn't just go away. Mm-hmm. And that was something that I wanted to make very clear, especially when all those things were happening, like from insurance to, you know, the payroll to just not acknowledging her, you know, and I'm sending messages letting him know, you know, she's here, she was born, and I just get left on read. There's nothing.
Left on read. And when you were told that there wasn't any money to help, you know, with your medical, with the medical expenses or to help with Navy Joan, you know, he was buying some nice cars and spending about $500,000 on women. And there were a lot of expenses that were going out on his end. He's going on nice vacations. I mean, that's kind of jarring to see, you know, things like that in the press. And then you're dealing with everything, protecting him, dealing with what you're dealing with in Arkansas. How did that make you feel?
Hurt. There's a lot of times throughout the book, you know, like I contemplated suicide at that time in my life. I knew that, you know, I wasn't going to do that as long as I was pregnant. But, you know, there's a chapter throughout the book that was really, really tough for me to write. And without my co-authors, I don't think I would have gotten through it, because it was, you know, I talk about how I become the scandal, and it's possible, you know, Hunter had invested his trust in me and I let him down because I became pregnant. And so I turn into this horrible, dark place mentally. And I think that, you know, after the pregnancy, I'll just, you know, if I'm gone, Navy will have a better life. And, you know, she'll be brought up by my parents, who are, you know, great people. And she'll have this backbone of support with my family. And then there won't be no scandal for Hunter, because, you know, it'll go away. If I go away, it'll go away. And, you know, throughout the book, I even talk about in that chapter, you know, I wrote a letter to my mom and my dad and my sister. And like the first time I fed Navy, I talk about being so detached, because my cousin was holding her in the room, and they bring the bottle in for the first time you feed her. And I'm just like, you can feed her, it's no big deal. And they're like, no, the first feeding has to come from the mother. And the thing that went through my head was, I probably should, because one day Navy's not going to have very many pictures of her mother and I, or her and her mother. So it's probably best that I do the feeding, and at least one day she can cherish this photo. You know, like it got to a really dark place. And it wasn't until I found that love for my child. And, you know, a mother's love is the greatest thing on earth.
Powerful.
It really. And it wasn't until then that I dug myself out of that hole. And once I dug myself out of that hole, I filed for paternity, and I knew that I would break down any barrier and, you know, withhold no pity to anybody when it came down to my daughter, because that was the one person I was going to protect and right. be there for till the day that I died.
I love that you had said you never once thought about abortion. And I mean, here you were talking about removing yourself from the equation, but never Navy Joan. We're talking with London Roberts, and I know we only have a few minutes left. I know that, there's no protection. There's no Secret Service protection or any kind of security afforded to Navy, even though everybody knows who she is. You've talked about your home getting broken into.
Yes.
And that obviously is a huge concern. No security, though, even though she's the granddaughter of the president of the United States.
Yes. And, you know, the more I talk about it, the more it just doesn't make any sense, because she is a first granddaughter. And quite frankly, you know, there's so much going on out there in the world that you don't know how far someone will go
right.
to get that, you know, that family.
And I'll add, too, that the president has said, quote, all his grandchildren are protected by the Secret Service. And this is in multiple news articles. He has said this to the press publicly. And at least the White House has commented on it. And but Navy Joan is the one who is not afforded the same sort of protection as the other grandkids.
No, Navy Joan has no Secret Service.
Goodness. This, what would you, you know, and we're again talking to London Roberts, what would you say to, because not just Hunter, but maybe the first family, because it's also important that kids know where they come from and they know, you know, the other half of their family, the other half of their, you know, genetics, where, you know, who their grandparents are, who their aunts and uncles are. What would you say to the family? Because since she's, and the nation sees that she's always left out, and someday she's going to see that as well. I don't even know how you prepare her for that. What would you tell the family? What would you say to them, maybe to, you know, on her behalf?
Well, you know, in the book, Out of the Shadows of the Last, I end it with a letter to Hunter that I write to him. But, you know, to everybody involved is, you know, one, you've missed out. You have missed out on such a beautiful, brilliant child. And those are years that you can never get back. You know, those are things that I wish they could have been involved in. Because those are, I mean, the best years of their life, it seems, as a mother. And, you know, watching them grow and building this foundation for them. And, you know, you've missed a lot. And I just have to ask why. What's the point in that?
She's a beautiful little girl, and you're strong fighting for her. And I appreciate that about you. And thank you for coming on and being incredibly transparent about everything. The book, which is out August 20th, you can pre-order it now. Out of the Shadows, My Life Inside the Wild World of Hunter Biden. London Roberts, mother of beautiful Navy Joan. Thank you, London.
Thank you.
Of course. I agree with Annie Oakley, who said, quote, I would like to see every woman know how to handle guns as naturally as they know how to handle babies. Now, I myself regularly conceal carry a 9mm. Now, that said, not every woman is like me, has had the hours of training that I've had, or feels comfortable around firearms due to years of use, or maybe they're by a gun-free zone. I'd like to change that, what I can, while encouraging self-defense at the same time. So this is where Byrna comes in. It's kind of like a starter weapon. They make a non-firearm firearm. I like the idea of incredible force sending chemical irritants towards a threat as an additional option for women. And the Byrna SD model shoots chemical irritant projectiles, 68 caliber rounds that can deter threats in their tracks up to 50 feet away. I mean, it is hard. Easy target acquisition, zero recoil. Byrna is legal in all 50 states. There's no background checks, no permits required. It's shipped directly to your door. Gun-free isn't applicable to Byrna. It's great for wherever guns are banned. Visit Byrna.com/Dana for 10% off. That's BYRNA.com/Dana.
And now, all of the news you would probably miss. It's time for Dana's Quick Five.
Oh, this is so bad. Oh my gosh, a town in Pomfret, Connecticut. You've heard of when blank hits the fan, right? Okay, well, what happens when a manure truck rolls over, smashes into a car, and sprays it all over multiple vehicles and homes? And I mean like the white clapboard houses. Yeah, that's what we're talking about here. Oh, but this is what happened in Pomfret, Connecticut. They said it was one of the neighbors said, quote, it was like literally a waterfall of brown. What can brown do for you? Whenever I see those commercials, I'm like, who? The driver suffered minor injuries. Workers from the trucking company were on the scene this week cleaning up the mess. I mean, this house was coated in, just covered in it. Covered in it.
How do you clean it? It's
there's
demolition.
Literal photos and video.
You fire a demolition. There's no cleaning that.
I mean, it's manure. It's nasty. Oh. Oh, my gosh. What if that was your house? I can't even imagine the smell. It's July now. Oh, my gosh. Theodore Roosevelt's timepiece was stolen and then returned. Okay. The Sagamore Hill National Historic Site on Long Island. It's featured in a new exhibit. It was stolen about four decades ago, and now it's returned to its rightful home thanks to some local experts. It was his silver pocket watch. It went missing in July of 87. And it was on a six-year loan to the Buffalo inaugural site when it was taken. So now it's back. His watch is back. I know that's like makes your day, right? A five-year-old girl was left on the bus for the entire day in hot heat. I still have a story about one time I went to the bus shed because I couldn't see out the window. I was a little bitty tiny when I was in kindergarten. I was in toddler's clothes. And I couldn't see to know I was coming home. And they didn't know I was there. And I went all the way to the bus shed. It's a true story. Anyway, this five-year-old girl, she was on the bus. It was 94 degrees. It was in Louisiana. Oh, humidity. And she did not leave the bus until school was out 5 hours later. She was in the school all day, or in the bus all day, 94 degree heat. So they're looking into what in the world happened here. How did this happen? Maybe you've come across this. If you had to go and get a prescription filled, you know, maybe it takes a really long time to get it filled, or maybe you're told by the pharmacy they don't have that in stock right now. You don't ever want to be without a medication that you need to get better. So do what I did and take control of your family's health with a medical emergency kit from the doctors at The Wellness Company. Now, this is not a first aid kit, right? The kit is filled with essential doctor prescriptions that treat over 39 different medical issues. They have strong antibiotics for infections of all types, including pneumonia, strep throat, ear infections, all kinds of sinusitis, like sinus infections like I always get. It's like having a little urgent care without the $75 copay right at your house. And you don't have to wait to see a doctor. You don't have to wait in a waiting room. And everybody knows that's like one of the sickest places to be. You don't have to wait at a pharmacy. Every home should have at least one of these medical emergency kits. And they put it all together in your little kit. They pack it all up and they ship it directly to you. I've used it myself. I've used it several times myself. I ended up getting a sinus infection that turned into strep throat. And I could not, from the airport, traveling, doing everything that I could do. And then, of course, my doctor's office is closed. I did not want to have to go and wait into urgent care. I was too sick. And I remembered I had my medicines. I went in, I took my medicines, and I was literally, and Kane remembers, I was like back on the road to better health. And I was able to actually do my job and be on air the next day, which is incredibly important for, you know, what I do. You can actually visit twc.health. That's TWC for The Wellness Company, .health/Dana, and use promo code Dana, and that'll save you 15%. It's super easy. It's all online. It takes like 3 minutes. So visit twc.health/Dana and enter code Dana, and that promo code Dana, that gets you 15% off. Again, that's twc.health/Dana. Yesterday, we posted about the, I hate even saying this phrase. Can this be the last time I say it? The Hucktaw video. Oh, yeah. I don't even care about this thing. I made one video. I said one thing about it, and I'm going to say one other thing today. Because I don't even think this is about the chick that's in it. This is about a phenomenon on the right, specifically. Now, I have a piece that I'm going to have coming out about this. Because I'm looking at the ideology of the right, which I think this is a symptom of. It's not even about this the video or the chick in it or anything. It's not about the blowjob girl, okay? It's not about any of this. It's about how I think conservatives, or even, you know, politically agnostic normal people, for the lack of a better way to say it, I think that they've been so desperate for any kind of heteronormative event to save them from the deluge of rainbow everything that they'll make anything that even remotely kind of affirms that famous. So, and I think that that video was such a heteronormative event, right? Because that it coincided with Pride Month, which July ended, thankfully, was kind of ironic because we all justifiably complain, right, about the consumerist gay sex overload, topped off by all the stuff that went down in San Francisco last weekend. But now you have hats made because of the saying in that video, and probably shirts, and maybe even those precious Stanleys that everybody walks around with, right? Everybody's got them. They got them Stanleys. So I think that it's a little bit more. You can't just say that it's just, it was just one thing in the video. It's, you know, a lot more than that. And Zach Bryan concert appearances, interviews, there's a lot of stuff that it's been doubled and tripled and quadrupled down on. So it's not just like one moment that was in a video. It's, and look, I'm a capitalist, but so are all of the companies that just sizz rainbowed us all to death for 4 weeks in June, right? My whole thing is, can people just stop sharing everything about their sex lives? You know what I mean? Can we just stop with the sharing of all of it? Is it too much to ask? I mean, save something for the guy in bed. Can you please? Will you? Because, and I don't know, maybe some people say it's prude. And if you don't know what prude means, that's Latin for not a hoe. And to ask everybody from, like, you know, the Hucktaw Horde to the Rainbow Mafia to stop oversharing everything. You know what I mean? And I also remarked that there are a significant number of people on the right who may vote Republican this round, right? But they're not religious people. It's one thing to be a disciple, and it's one thing to just, you know, like Jesus, right? He's an okay guy. I mean, he turned water into wine and everything. Woohoo! Now, some folks, you know, celebrating blowjobs on video and on hats and on concert stages and in interviews, you know, the press store is probably just starting, is awesome and hilarious. So lighten up, you not a hoes, right? But it's also a complete contradiction of the trad revival, which sees women as women and men as men and rejects modernity, which I hate, and embraces and celebrates tradition, correct? Progressives host slut walks. And that was bad. We made fun of it, right? Did we not make fun of it?
Oh, yeah, we did.
And they're bad. But wait, what's the new rule? Because now conservatives publicly venerate BJs and merchandise the celebration. So what is bad? What's the new rule? I didn't get the memo. Is there a new rule? I just don't know.
Everything's bad that the right does, or is, at least if anyone even possibly thinks it could be from the right, that's bad.
Well, no, I don't. My whole point is, I don't want us to start saying that this is good if we have our own version of it.
Right. No. I see what you mean. Then you're right. It's trying to play the game that they've been playing this whole time.
That is, yeah. That's my whole entire point. And I don't want to single anybody out, you know. But my whole thing is, I don't want to say, wait, no, it's only good if the right can do a version of it. And then if we have our version of it to counter their version of it, then it's okay. Because then if our version of it is okay, doesn't that then somehow make okay by its very presence what they're doing? Do you see what I'm saying? And then you can be like, well, that's one thing, and this is another. Is it, though?
And there's another angle, too, where it's like, you know, the narrative of the right being so uptight all the time. And
it's not. I'm going to tell you, people, you're not uptight if you're not a hoback, okay? You're
right.
Not being uptight. So you're being classy.
When something like this is said and is funny and it's in passing, I think a lot of this was the left capitalizing on it to kind of shove it in people's faces in a way. Because did you see remember when the story came out that she had a dad that was a preacher and that she got, like,
I've seen fired? All kinds of stuff come, like, out, but I've seen
false.
All the merching come from one. Let's be real. I mean, it's one thing if it's like, oh, somebody said it in a video, etc. I get
right.
It. You're young, you're 23, you say something in camera, that's fine. It happens.
Seemed like there was a lot of effort behind this one particular thing.
I don't know that I agree with that.
I don't know. It looked like that
but
there
here's
was
the
a
big,
lot of
here's
effort.
The biggest thing, though. Part of the reason that we're in this mess, and hear me, part of the reason that we're in this mess is because feminism has sold sexual promiscuity as freedom and empowerment. That's the big reason why we're in this mess. I mean, women were told to fornicate for freedom. Really, that's kind of, you know, that's one of the core principles of feminism. And this has been, as you know, a great gift to families and divorce rates, right? Now, simultaneously, feminism has unyoked men from any kind of responsibility, any kind of accountability or duty to the women empowering themselves through sexual freedom, right? A practice which hasn't at all, as you know, contributed to the classification of abortion as a woman's right or any of the sort. So I think the point in this, there's like two things that I'm seeing. The first is that I think part of the right is becoming just progressively unchurched and more culturally left-leaning and entirely unaware of it. And then I also think that there is this idea that you can somehow remake something that is bad into a virtue if you do it, simply because your bias alters your perception of whether it's good to do or not, if that makes sense. That's what I don't like, because then you're becoming what you oppose, correct? And it's not prudish, which again is Latin for not a hoe. It's not prudish to say, maybe you should. I mean, if you make one thing to an aside, like in a private conversation that you don't expect to get out, you know, I mean, granted, I could get really Bible thumper on you and I could be like, well, you know, maybe you shouldn't say anything privately that you wouldn't want to express in front of the world, or say, as my grandmother would say, next to Jesus. And then I got in trouble one time because I was like, I heard you gossiping at lunch. Would you say that to Jesus? And it was like the only time my grandmother got mad at me. That's an aside. Anyway, I just think that it's one thing to be one moment, but it's another thing to like build it and keep pushing it and keep pushing it and keep pushing it. And this is like less about the video, more about the right's perspective on things, right? Now I look at this and then I see all the red pill stuff. Have you seen that, like the trad wife movement, where you have these chicks that are 23, barely married, never had kids, and they want to sit here and lecture all of you about what successful relationships look like? Never mind the fact that their nickname was Mattress when they were in college and in high school. That's, you know, I see that happening too, which is going to be a whole other topic of discussion. But I'm just curious as to what this sort of convergence looks like culturally for the right in the future. Is my whole point in this. Don't take something that you don't like on this side and think, I'm going to do it and make it virtuous because you're doing it. It's still not the best thing to do. That's the whole point. Don't be prude about it.
Thanks for tuning in to today's edition of Dana Lash's Absurd Truth Podcast. If you haven't already, make sure to hit that subscribe button on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.